big time radio. Bring it up there, big John. Bring it up there, big there.
That's a quote from the Eastern Pennsylvania Shoemaker's Gazette. Interesting little paper, and they struggle along there. It's a semi-annual, but outside of that, a wonderful editorial situation here.
I'm going to write a letter to that nice Mr. Gambling who's out in the morning and see if we can't do something about him.
All set, man.
Tonight's program is of such tremendous philosophical import. Watch me, John. No, it's going to be over here this time. It's of such philosophical import that we're going to have to get all the commercials, or at least a lot of commercials, out of the way right away. So let's call Big Ed McMahon in here. Would you hit the ding-dong, please, John? There
you
go.
What you are about to hear will be performed in the nude.
Dr.
Dr. Pepper is a nice, fizzy, soft drink.
By the way, this is an unbelievable spot in person. It's just magnificent.
There is this problem.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people
don't know how they get away with this stuff on the air. It's just terrible.
I mean, they don't understand it, do they, Mark?
No. That's why Dr. Pepper is America's most misunderstood soft drink.
They think it is everything from a health drink to a pepper sauce.
Oh, you should know what it really is.
Just a soft drink.
All you have to do to like it is to try it.
Here is a man now.
Hello.
Do you understand Dr. Pepper?
Do you understand Dr. Pepper? No, I do not. And I am many men.
Try it.
Very well.
Do you
man
like
must
yes,
always
I
love fellow
it.
Man.
That is good for now. You may chant with us.
One day.
Must learn to commune with
chant.
Inner soul.
One day all will chant.
Terrible. The cue sheet here says, join in on last chorus. Key of E, ridiculous way to earn a living. Would you please, John, again, over and over and over again. It's some kind of deep sense
welcome
of
to Chevron
guilt.
Island.
It's guilt that does it.
With Chevron Supreme?
Oh, hold
guilt.
Just a minute. I'll have to see how much money I have in my purse. You see, I was shopping, and there was this sale, and I guess
well,
I...
Well, don't you have a Chevron National credit card?
I wish I had.
Well, do you have MasterCard, American Express, or Bank America?
Oh, yes. Do you take them? Oh,
certainly. Over 24,000 Chevron dealers coast to coast now accept MasterCard,
talk about it,
American Express, and Bank America.
Oh.
By the way, if you'd like a Chevron National credit card, here's an application.
Hey, that's great. Fill it up, please. Why do you have all those tropical plants and native masks?
Get your head
well,
off me.
We'd like you to think of Chevron Island as a warm and friendly tropical island. That's one of the reasons why we accept American Express and MasterCard and Bank America.
I see. You want to make it attractive so more cars will stop here.
And we get an occasional boat, too.
Oh, they chickened out on me. Where was that? That real cornball Albino Ray type guitar to catch. You know the one they've got. Yes, it's guilt that does it. Now, all set, John. Watch. Over to the other one there. We're all ready to hear it go. All set. Ready to go here. Tonight, we have taken this opportunity to salute a great American whom you probably never heard of. But you're going to hear of him now. A great American who did it for all of us. Listen carefully. Got to set the mood. Concentrate. Look at that crummy little cheap Japanese transistor radio of yours as if it's a friend. Look at it. Ignore the hum, which we always have on our audio system here. Look carefully at it. Close your eyes. See the scene. It was just a little bit after 3 a.m. last Tuesday, and nearly deserted on the Los Angeles freeway, was quiet. 3 o'clock in the morning. It was the freeway, But the scene was right out of the Indy 500. Out in front, leading the pack at 130 miles an hour, was Mrs. Judith Martineau, a 23-year-old housewife from Pell Lake, Wisconsin, driving a 1963 Buick Skymaster. 130 miles an hour, she slowed down to 105 miles an hour, only to change freeways. Fantastic scene. Right behind her, running neck and neck, were two highway patrolmen in late model Mercuries. Her lights flashing. A third highway patrolman was trailing in a new Dodge. And bringing up the rear with the accelerator down to the floorboards was a Los Angeles policeman in a battered Plymouth. 130 miles an hour, 135 miles an hour, they whistled down the deserted Los Angeles freeway. The officers' cars were equipped with big souped-up engines. Mrs. Martineau's 7-year-old car had a standard 8-cylinder engine, apparently extremely well-tuned. There she goes. The chase began on the Long Beach Freeway at Carson Street, just outside the Long Beach city limits, at 3.03 a.m., when Highway Patrolman Merlin Scott and Dave Carter spotted the Buick traveling at a fantastic speed. As the three cars streaked onto the Santa Ana Freeway at more than 115 miles an hour, the two officers knew they had a big-time race on their hands. They radioed for help. They were on the Golden State Freeway next, then the Ventura Freeway. Freeway after freeway. They crossed state line after state line. County after county. Set it back, John. Quick. It was straight going now, and Mrs. Martineau now, at long last, began to really speed up. By this time, the Dodge and the Plymouth had joined the chase. It was getting more exciting by the moment. Mrs. Martineau showed fantastic skill as a race driver, the pursuing officer said later. Whenever a patrol car would try to get up alongside of her, she gunned up, got some source of power from some place that none of them could figure out. She maneuvered in front of the vehicle, always keeping the pursuing squad car directly behind her. She whirled back and forth. A.J. Foyt coming into that last two or three laps of the big 500 Indy. The highway patrolman in the Dodge, who had now passed the two Mercuries and found himself jockeying for number two position, finally saw an opening. He pulled alongside Mrs. Martineau and forced her into making a pit stop at the Tampa Avenue stop in Tarzana. The pursuit had covered 43 miles on four freeways. Officers Scott and Carter said Mrs. Martineau, looking nice and calm and cool, looked out of the car window and said, "Well, I had a good car, full tank of gas, and I just thought I'd let her go. That's all. Just thought I'd let her go." My God, that babe did it for all of us. Bring it up. 130 miles an hour in a 1963 Buick. That's driving, man. I'm going to get Car and Driver to do a piece on her. And so tonight, we in our sports department here at this concerned radio station salute another great American sportsman, Mrs. Judith Martineau, driving number three, that 1963 Buick Skymaster, Leadfoot Martineau. I like this. You're out here playing like a madman. My God, listen to that man jingle them keys. Beer pouring out like a great froth out of his. Here he goes into the finals. Hanging a big job. Big, big. I'm the Phantom of the Opera. I've got you in my clutches, baby. Oh, you'll never get away from me. All right, that's enough. That's enough madness. Hey, I'll tell you, John, would you do this for me, Dad? You talk about beautiful music. Give me the first cut on that same disc. I'll give you the cue for it. Hold it in the veins there. Just hold it. And while you're setting that up, John, let's hit him where it counts. You know, they're still quivering. Go ahead, hit him. Go ahead.
Like a woman.
Snuck right in, Adam.
Dubonnet.
Yes.
The drink that's like a woman.
It is so
soft,
chic.
Beautiful. with a little bite that makes it interesting.
Has anyone told you who have Duvernay?
Two beautiful eyes.
Like a woman when she's gone.
Here, another bottle of Duvernay, my dear, and you will be able to talk well and good to me.
Like a woman.
Duvernay. Some people like it straight and uncomplicated.
Yeah.
Others like it mixed up with a spritz of soda or on the rocks. And that's all right, too, any time of day.
It is
Mrs. Duvernay is gentle.
Like a woman.
Duvernay. It all started in France. The drink that's like a woman.
I love it. It's so beautiful.
Like a woman.
Maybe that's why men like it, too. Duvernay Company, product of USA, New York. Available at fine restaurants and package stores.
Zap. Ain't nothing like a Duvernay ice cube. Oh, listen, speaking of ice cubes, I was so embarrassed the other night. Oh, man. Have you ever been around, a really bad practical joke? And it didn't pan out. Oh, yeah. I went to this party, and I don't know if you've ever seen these things. You know, there are some things that that the idea is funnier than the realization. It's sneezing powder. It's a great idea, but a miserable realization. Never really works. But I went to this party, and this guy kept nudging me. He says, oh, man, wait till the crowd sees this. It's going to be great. He says, watch now. Fred's bringing out the drinks. And he brought out the drinks, and they had a machine, you know, an ice cube maker, that made ice cubes in the form of naked chicks. You ever seen them? Well, they're funnier to talk about than to see, because they really don't come off, you know? All right, that's enough. Now, you want to hear some every time I hear this piece, you know, it just conjures up everything. There's certain types of, did you hear this thing, John? All right, listen to this now, instantly. Now, I'm going to set the mood, see? All right? You know, you have to set the mood. It's this little bleak house in a state that's composed of nothing but dust and the wind. And the wind is coming out of the north, see? An old Pa Cadiddlehopper sitting over there, see, he's been having eczema now since 1912. And old Ma Cadiddlehopper has been wearing the same dress, which was made out of a sugar sack, which was made in 1903, since 1904. And the two of them are standing there, and they've just gotten the word that their son, Johnny, has been arrested for highway robbery. And as the curtain goes up, we see Pa Cadiddlehopper sitting alone at his kitchen table. He is on his last legs. Ma Cadiddlehopper comes in carrying a bucket of water covered with swamp scum. Swamp scum is something you don't know about. Bring it up. Speaking of swamp scum, this is WOR New York, and I don't wish to apply any editorial. It's just sort of, you know, word association. You just can't control it. You know, good psychiatrist to tell you cannot control word association. So if I give you a word, don't tell them what you're allowed to think of instantly. Like hello, what'd you think of? Or if I say let's just think of a word. Ice cream cone. What'd you think of? Do you start to itch? They can't control it. You can't. We have a couple of other commercials here, John, so let's get them away. Oh, no, these are live, I think, aren't they? Let's see. Bye-bye. Oh, yes, Ach, du Liebe. Yes, we have the commercial here. It says, say, have you thought about Germany this year and figured you can't afford it? Well, the Bavarian Summer Festival creates a gemütlich slice of authentic Germany just 2.5 hours from New York. You got music for it? All right, bring it on. Sneak it in. Come on. This is music? Ach, du lieber, ja, this is dein beer hall, of course. Oh, it's the Oktoberfest, the first Gemütlichkeit. Oh, Aro, Aro, Stein, with a dark beer, please.
All right, all together now we sing.
Holy smokes. That's wild. That was actually recorded, incidentally, in the Oktoberfest in Munich. It was. And listen, if you've never seen this thing, you have never seen a true, genuine folk festival. And it's wild. The Bavarian Summer Festival, and they do this in Pennsylvania now, creates a gemütlich slice of authentic Germany just 2.5 hours from New York in beautiful Lakewood Park at Barnesville, PA. All the color and the whole jazz of the Munich Oktoberfest, 86-acre tree-shaded setting. If you've never been to an Oktoberfest, you should really go. You know what it is? It's the biggest, most unbelievable beer bust you ever saw in your life. And they've got it all going there, man. Wiener Schnitzel, Strudel, Bratwurst, Knackwurst. And, you know, all they do is, you know, sit around, drink this fantastic beer and eat Knackwurst and holler and sing. See teams of magnificent beer wagon horses. And they have all those big beer halls. Now, how you get there, and there's a lot of stuff going on for kids, take Interstate 80 to Interstate 81. I presume that's in Pennsylvania. Is that Interstate 80 in PA? Then south to Route 54 between Tahmaqua and Mahoney City. Mahoney City. And, well, that's pretty complicated. Admission is only $1. Children under 12 free. See Germany July 3rd through the 12th. The Bavarian Summer Festival in Barnesville, PA. Now, to find out better how to get there, call Collect. They'll pick up the tab. Call them Collect at 717, that's the area code, 467-2682. I repeat there. We will repeat the number for you, please. 717-467, that's area 717-467-2682. Prosit. Can I have a little more of that gemütlich music there? This is the sound of the music. I'll tell you, it's you have a feeling like you're in some kind of a hallucination. I've been at one of these things. I mean, you see these old ladies jumping up on top of the tables with the steins and singing and yelling, you know, and old guys named Otto are pinching them. It's fantastic. And all these guys blowing sousaphones and the whole bit. The horses come walking right in, you know, drinking the beer and yelling too. It's all the whole bit. It. Let me tell you something about that. That is authentic, that you just heard there. That was actually recorded in the Munich Oktoberfest. And you know, and this is not part of any commercial, so don't think it is. I've gone to 2 Oktoberfests in Munich. One of them was one of the most eerie experiences I think I've ever had in my life. It happened the first one I went to was in 1957. And at that time, Munich was still largely destroyed by the war. It was not yet built up. In fact, Munich was, I think, over three-quarters destroyed under air raids. And so here was this fantastic... It's done in a big park, like. It's a tremendous park. Just you get on a streetcar, it goes right there. It's like it's Central Park or something. It's a big park right on the outskirts of Munich. Is that the way you got there, Skip? You get on a streetcar, and floating above... Now, I'm recalling the scene. It's such an eerie scene. Floating above this great, vast field, they have these enormous balloons that are shaped like beer steins. They're way up in the air. They may be 1,000 feet up. They're way up there. Big beer steins. They look exactly like beer steins. And in the darkness, they have a searchlight on them. You see these giant steins floating high up in the air, and as you get closer and closer to the Oktoberfest grounds, you can practically feel the soil under your feet vibrate. It is a strange phenomena. And all the great breweries in Germany, Augustiner, Löwenbräu, all the great breweries, there are something like 16 or 20 major breweries in Germany. They each one have an enormous beer hall, which they put up on these grounds. When I say enormous, I mean enormous. I mean so big that they're about the size of, they look like the kind of hangar that you would put a Zeppelin in. I mean, that's the only thing I could say to look like a hangar, because the ceiling in them must be, 200 feet high. They're fantastic. And on the outside, of course, they're all lit up with searchlights. And I remember the Löwenbräu one particularly. I remember this one where they had a gigantic lion. You've seen this Löwenbräu. Have you ever looked at the label of Löwenbräu? You know, this German beer. Well, the label has a lion. I think he's a blue colored, I believe. It's a big blue lion. Well, on their beer hall, they have this fantastic lion. Tremendous. He's mechanical. And as he moves, you see, and as he moves up and down, he is drinking this Bierstein. And it's a wild scene. Now, the one thing, don't go away, Skip. Before you go, I want to ask you, there's one thing there that I've seen that I've never seen any place else in my life, was this time at this Oktoberfest. In each one of them, of course, is filled to the rafters. I mean, literally to the rafters with people. And they have these gigantic wooden tables. Everybody sits around these tables. And I would say in each one of these enormous beer halls, there are from 5,000 to maybe 10,000 people, roughly. If you can imagine going into a hall that has 5,000 to 10,000 people in it, all doing one thing, drinking beer. It's a fantastic scene. And they serve these gigantic liter steins. These are these big stone steins. This is the way beer is served in Germany. And you get a half-liter stein, or you get a full-liter stein. They're gray. And on the outside of each one, of course, is the great crest of the beer that sponsors this beer hall. You can tell I've been there, huh? So my favorite happens to be Augustine. You know, it's a very good beer. Yeah, you too? Ah, yeah, very good. It's an excellent beer. You know, it's funny, when you go to a place like Germany, you find out that the beers that the Germans dig are not the ones that we really know about over here, you know? But nevertheless, each one tries to outdo each other. You know, each one of these giant beer halls, and some of them have been built like for years. They just take them down, and they don't build these things until the next Oktoberfest, right? They're kept in some warehouse or something, these beer halls. So they put them up only for this thing. And millions of people walk around, and they buy stuff like, they have thousands of little stands, all eating. It's all related to eating. And, yeah, drinking and eating, but both, you know. For example, there'll be a stand where they do nothing but sell, roast chestnuts, right? You'll see roast chestnuts. Or you see marzipan. There will be an entire stand where they make marzipan rabbits and stuff. And the guy's sitting there dipping the marzipan into the chocolate. Then there was one, some strange things. For example, they have a stand where they have nothing but sort of burnt roasted peanuts that are covered with sugar. And they put them into these kind of cones. And thousands of people, yeah. And, you know, you can tell all the different Germans walking around. You see the Bavarian types, you know, the Munich Bavarian type of German. And he's different. He's sort of the squat, dark-haired type German, you know. He is the bald Heine. And he's walking around there. And then you see the Prussians walking around, tall, blonde, you know. And you can just see the whole crowd. And there's hardly any intermixing between the various groups, you see. But they're there. See, you see all the lederhosen and stuff. And then the thing that I remember about this particular Oktoberfest was a sight which, it's a fantastic scene. Outside of one of the beer halls, they had a tremendous trench dug. The trench was about, I would say, probably 6 feet deep, maybe 30 feet long. It was a big, long trench. And in the trench was a tremendous pile of burning hickory logs. All these logs were burning. It was like looking down at hell. It really was, because it was dark out there, see. And you look down, you see this great trench of burning logs. You see the sparks flying up in the air. Now, what was it for? Man, I have never seen anything in, you know, Americans just aren't like this. This is a different scene. Over the trench, they had, it was a tremendous oven. And they had a great spit. And twirling on the spit were three complete oxen. Oxen, friend. I'm not talking about chickens. I'm talking about oxen. Now, how big is an oxen? Well, as big as an ox. I mean, that's a big baby. And they have them just, you know, the spit there. They're just skewered on the spit. And there's a guy down at the end. He's got a great big handle, see. And he's turning these gigantic things. It's like, you know, talk about pagan. And so, you have a feeling any minute now, you know, Attila the Hun is going to, show up, you know, wearing his bearskin rugs and stuff. And so I walked up to this thing. You know, being a typical American, my idea is, you know, in a barbecue, kind of stuff. We don't realize we're quite civilized, you know? And so, yeah, our idea is a barbecue. You get a little plate and a couple of little ribs on it, maybe potato salad. That's an American barbecue, see? So I walk up to this tremendous beer hall. Yeah, okay. There's this tremendous beer hall, see? And I walk up to this place, and I'm looking at this thing. It's all sizzling, see? And I'm with a German. So I say, that's a sign, Ochsenfleisch, huh? And he says, yeah, this is good, yeah, very good. I said, let's have some. You know, I figure you go in, you know, and they give you a little thing. He said, very good, very good. So he says something to the guy operating this thing. He says, yeah, and he takes out a pig sticker that must have weighed 40 pounds. I mean, it was the kind, you know, that you can just see Richard the Lionhearted beheading the infidels with it, you know. Tremendous thing. So he takes this thing, and he's got a big apron, you know, it's a great big German type. And he walks over to this revolving oxen, say, and he goes, whack, whack, and he whacks off a chunk that weighed about 4 pounds, say, and he scores it on the end of the knife, and he shoves it out at me, and now I've got a great big stone plate with a chunk of oxen meat on it. I mean, a great big thing. And so with that, my friend, he has one whacked off too, and we go into this beer hall with our two big plates of meat, you know. So the waitress says, this is come with me. See? And so we go rushing to millions of people yelling and hollering. I sit down with my big chunk of oxen hock, whatever it is. You know, that's more than meat, you know. It's real live. So I sit down, and my friend hollers up, ein Liter beer. So with that, they bring us these tremendous steins of Augustiner beer, which is a favorite beer, by the way, many Germans. I don't think they even have it in this country. It's a tremendous, fantastic stein of this beer. Now, remember, I'm fresh out of, typical American outdoor fete is to have a few little, maybe some Fritos. That's a big time. You know, somebody puts a couple of hamburgers on the grill. You have a Coke. This is the real thing. I mean, I got 4 pounds of meat in front of me, you know, sort of jumping and quivering, and you can see all this, you know, it's all sizzling on the outside with the flames, and there's a couple of pieces of hickory logs still burning on it, and I've got a gigantic liter of beer, and all around me, these people are singing, bring up that, this is the way it sounds. I mean, it's fantastic, see, well, I found myself suddenly turning into a true savage, you know. I grab this knife they put in front of me, I whack off a chunk of the meat, see, and I stick it in my car. I start eating it. Down goes about four big swallows of this giant beer stein. And instantly, you know, from inside, I let one come out, you know, whack off another hump. Within 5 minutes, there I was. I was absorbed into this fantastic scene. I'm up on a table swinging around with a girl wearing a dirndl and yelling at her. It went on for 3 days. What a scene. Whee! I don't know how I brought that in tonight, but... Oh, I've seen some things in my time, friends. Shee! By the way, I understand they're going to have one of those things in Pennsylvania. They're going to have one of those big oxen spits. Well, there was another thing they did there, too. Oh, man. There's a certain kind of fish they get. I know they won't have this in Pennsylvania. Maybe they'll have something like it. But there was a certain kind of fish that they catch in the Rhine River. And it's a big, big fish. I don't know. Maybe it's a carp or something. It's a huge fish. And they take these fish and they put them in these hot coals. Again, it's another big trench, see? You come up there and they pull one of these fish out for you, you know? And you see these guys sitting on a gigantic fish. It's about 4 feet long. And they're whacking away at it. The kids are whacking on the other end of it. They're drinking beer. In fact, you see 10-year-old kids drinking liters of beer. And, I mean, these are liters of beer, man. This is not that friendly little beer that you hear, Phil Rizzuto talking about on baseball. This is beer. Hairy beer, you know? Gee, wow. You know, the best writing I've ever read about that subject, about the subject of the Oktoberfest, was... written by Thomas Wolfe. I'm talking about the first Thomas Wolfe, the Asheville, North Carolina town. What was it, South Carolina, North Carolina? The Asheville Thomas Wolfe. And I've, from time to time, I've wondered about, I've tried to remember what novel, do any of you out there know what novel it's in? Which novel is that in? It's not in Look Homeward, Angel. I think it's in The Web and the Rock. Is any literati out there? Let us know. Because, you know, a curious thing came about that night because of this Thomas Wolfe piece. I had just gone through a great Thomas Wolfe orgy. I think everybody goes through a Thomas Wolfe orgiastic phase. Do you agree with that? You mean you never read much of Wolfe? Oh, man, you should. Wolfe is a fantastic catharsis. There's a thing there. And I suspect within a couple of years there will be a great Thomas Wolfe resurgence with the new interest in the country people have, you know, with sensuality, with the sensual quality of the country itself, sunsets and rivers and, in other words, ecology. This was Wolfe. And he wrote a piece, one of the chapters in one of his novels was an evocation. It was about the Oktoberfest, the character in the book. I think it was Eugene Gant. He was always, you know, he was his own character in the books. Gant, I believe, was at the Oktoberfest for some reason or other. And he caught this thing. If anybody remembers what book it is, give us a call, quick. I'd like to know. But that's, you know, that's really irrelevant. Except that there was this great writing about the Oktoberfest. Well, that night, I was sitting in this giant beer hall with this German, see? And we'd had now about 5 liters of this beer. And I mean, I really knocked it down, see? Because that kind of beer, in that setting, is as natural to drink as it is natural to breathe air. It's difficult. Even if you don't like beer, you drink beer there. And it's natural, you know. And then 2 days later, you wonder what was all that about? You know, what nuttiness was this? You know, and it's just all, it's infectious. So we were sitting and eating a cheese or something and some more of this beer, and the German starts to talk. He was a writer, as a matter of fact, and he starts to talk about, you know, the Oktoberfest and everything. And the next thing you know, he starts talking about Thomas Wolfe. Now, I'm an American, see? And Thomas Wolfe was probably the quintessence of American writers. But here's a German. I don't think he'd ever been out of Germany. And he'd never been in the Hitler Youth or anything of that. I think he was only about 18 at that time. And he was sitting there talking about Wolfe. And there was a curious moment. He starts to discuss Thomas Wolfe, which I had read, and he starts to weep. He's weeping about Thomas Wolfe. Yeah, he's talking about great passages, and he's quoting them. He's quoting page after page of Thomas Wolfe, an American writer who most Americans, I suspect, have never read. And he was a great hero over there. In fact, many Europeans consider Thomas Wolfe and Mark Twain the two great literary figures of America, of all time. And yet you don't find many people in America really reading them. You don't find many people reading Twain. I found that. Did you find out what novel it was? Was it The Web and the Rock? Was I right? Huh. All right. All right. Shepard was right. It was The Web and the Rock. And if you get a chance, pick it up. I don't think he's out on paper. You know, speaking of that, I'll give you another suggestion for a book to read. If you want, the other day I was with an Englishman, and we were in Indianapolis, and he writes for a magazine. See, I was out there doing a piece for Car and Driver on the Indianapolis 500. And Charlie Fox, who is a fine writer and also writes for this magazine, we were both sitting in the Holiday Inn, I think it was, outside of Indianapolis, waiting for our plane, and he's an Englishman, and a genuine Englishman, and who digs America. You see, the curious thing about many Europeans is when they come over here, they discover the land and America that most Americans take quite a bit for granted. In fact, don't even think much about it. He was fascinated by Indiana and the plains and the flatland. Most Americans say, that's a place you just get through real quick, or you fly over or something. And he couldn't get enough of it. And so we sat in this Holiday Inn, and they had there was a drugstore attached to it, a big one, a great big drugstore with all kinds of books and stuff. And he says, I want to know about America. He says, you know, everywhere I go, he says, I find these people fantastic. They're great, interesting people. And now he's talking about Iowa people, Indiana people, Jersey people, and so on, which most of us take for granted. And so I did something which I have never in my life been asked to do, and it was a very interesting thing. We went into the bookstore, and he says, look, he says, as a writer, could you give me... And incidentally, he had read my book when he was in England, In God We Trust. And so we were talking about writing itself and the whole idea of trying to evoke your country so that other people can feel it. And he says, what would you suggest that I read to really feel something about America? So we went into this bookstore, and, you know, curiously enough, you find the bookstores, not curiously, I suspect it's symbolically enough, bookstores across the country will have different things. In short, if you walk into a bookstore on Times Square, you're going to get a whole, and I'm not even talking about the porno shops, I'm talking about one of the legitimate bookstores, or down on 8th Street, maybe. You will find they will have a whole collection of things which really are, in a sense, New York Eastern literature. It's the, you know, the Philip Roth, Norman Mailer syndrome is all, this is what you see. You go out further out, and you will find writers that are almost impossible to buy here. And I'm talking about great American writers. For example, you will go out to, say, this bookstore. I saw in this bookstore three complete shelves of people like O'Hara, people like F. Scott Fitzgerald, people like one of the others, Dos Passos. It's hard to find him around here, you see. You really have trouble. And then I found a writer. I said, here's a book. I said, here's a book now that I'm going to suggest if you really want to know something about America. Don't worry, I'll get those other two. Don't worry about it. So I have to, you know, calm the troops here. So I said, here's one. And I was amazed because it was on that bookstand. How many of you have ever read Raintree County? Most Easterners have never heard of this book. And yet, throughout Europe and large parts of America, this is one of the great epic novels about the American experience. Raintree County. I'll put this out now. I'll throw this out just as a rhetorical question. I wonder how many of you even know the name of the author who wrote it. Strange, tragic guy. In fact, he finished his book. His book was done, and I think about the day after or the week after it was published, he committed suicide. Great American novel. So, while you're thinking about that, I have two more commercials here, so let's get them out of the way. Everybody's getting itchy. I'll do the Great Shanghai spot here. And the Great Shanghai is a groovy play. By the way, if you're coming into New York, and Fred's in there scratching now, he's feeling better. If you're coming into New York, and by the way, Noxzema helps that, Fred, and so does Lifebuoy, but that's something else. If you are coming into New York over the 4th, and you know it's going to be very difficult to find a good restaurant open, I can really tell you that. I'd like to recommend the Great Shanghai, particularly Sunday. This is up at 103rd and Broadway, and is a fine Chinese restaurant. Both Northern and Southern Chinese, Cantonese, and Mandarin cooking. It's a traditional restaurant, but a great one. And thousands of Columbia students have, got all egg rolled up there week after week. So, you can flip on egg rolls, man. Oh, yeah, you know, they don't tell you all the stuff that's in them, you know. But nevertheless, oh, yes, have you ever been consumed by an overwhelming hunger for an egg roll? Or why do you think it is? You can get hooked, friend. You get the egg roll monkey on your back, and you got a bad one. But nevertheless, this is at 103rd and Broadway. It's the Great Shanghai, and they have a big Chinese brunch from 11 until 3, and that means for $2.50, you can just walk in there and eat all you want of a great big selection of stuff they got. And if you're a kid under 4 feet tall, you are in for half price. You can be 7 feet wide, that's all right, but it's how tall you are. Mysterious Oriental wisdom, you know. Now, let's see, we also have Year One, the poster, speaking of Mysterious Oriental wisdom, and if your life lately has been drab, colorless, and, you know, it ain't making it, I would like to suggest that you send your check for $2 to Year One. That's, 460 West 34th Street, New York, New York, to get this unbelievable poster. You just put this up in your pad, and you don't even have to pay electricity anymore, you know? By the way, it's also an infrared poster, which, if you got infrared light available, will probably get you busted. This is year one. It's $2. Check or money order, and it is color. It's wild. And the address is 460 West 34th Street. Don't address any checks to me. Just address them to year one, 460 West 34th Street, New York, New York. Period. Money back if you're not totally flipped out, right? Now, does anyone know the name of this writer? All right, I see. All right, so I gave Charlie Fox that book. I says, you read this, and I'm going to have lunch with him next week. We're going to talk about him. I also suggested that he read Appointment in Samara. Did you read that one? You don't know that one, which he bought. And I said, this is something else, too. You'll understand why America is the way it is. I mean, then I also suggested, among other books, I suggested they happen to have the Dos Passos Trilogy. Did you ever read that trilogy, USA? 42nd Parallel, 1919, Big Money. Boy, that's a fantastic work. And so that, and I bought him a copy of the complete works of Charlie Brown. And I said, now, I said, you go home and sit for a while, let this marinate in your head, and you'll know something about America. Does anyone know the name of that writer? They don't even remember his name. It was made into a movie, but the movie was kind of second rate. But this idea of reading. It's funny, when you go from country to... Here it comes. It's coming in now. We're getting it in. Hello, test. Yeah, it's coming in. Who wrote Raintree County? But it's a great book. And the reason I'm so fascinated by it and knew a little bit about it was at one moment in my life, peripherally, I knew the author very briefly. And at that time, it just, didn't seem like anything. But his book is still around and is considered a great classic. But if you were to take a foreigner, somebody from another country, and you were going to try to give him an idea of what the country is about, in four or five books, what it's like to be an American, what would you say to him? What books would you give him to read? Well, I'll tell you one book that I suspect that everybody who is not an American should read. And it's funny, I'm not talking about classics, really. I'm just talking about books that have hooked me at one time or another. Life on the Mississippi by Twain. That is a gas of a book. Fantastic book. Well, I bought a copy of Life on the Mississippi, and I suspect you'd never guess where I bought it. I bought it. That's correct. Somebody finally got it. It's Ross Lockridge, who is the late author of Raintree County. And by the way, that is a real county in Indiana. But nevertheless, or at least the county that he based it on is real. I bought a copy of Life on the Mississippi in a department store. You ready for this, John? In Lagos, Nigeria. No, I wasn't trying to be chauvinistic. You know, when you get overseas and you're really overseas and you're really in a strange alien place, you get fantastically lonesome for for home, And I walked into this bookstore and they had, would you believe it, in Lagos, they had thousands of Edgar Rice Burroughs Tarzan books. Complete works, and they were all buying them like mad. And I bought Life on the Mississippi. They had everything that Twain ever wrote. And I walk out, and the guy says to me, he says, you like Twain, sir? And I says, yeah. He says, very good, very good. You must read him. He's talking to an American. So I went all over Africa, wherever I went, in the dark, in the miserable little candle-lit tents. I'm reading Life on the Mississippi, Twain. It ain't easy being an American. It just ain't easy.